All right, so what are we going to do?
Senator, yes, thank you.
You're going to let me talk?
It is about passion, persistence, justice, dreams, insistence. Lots of people from all walks of life. I want people to see themselves in these stories.
We the people.
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 We are the people.
We the people.
I'm Nina Turner. Welcome to episode 6 of our podcast, We the People. You won't believe who I ran into today. Just won't believe it. Senator Bernie Sanders. And my goodness, we all remember what happened in 2016 as he just shook the foundations of the political world in this country. Just shook it, changed it, challenged people to believe and hope and work for more.
Today, here in our small state, a state that has led this nation in so many ways, I am proud to announce my candidacy for President of the United States of America.
And really galvanized a generation of people, generations of people, not just the millennial generation, but especially the millennial generation, as he took them and they took him by storm as they turned out by the hundreds of thousands all across this country to hear Senator Bernie Sanders talk about a political revolution. And the reason why I say generations is because I am often reminded as I travel by some more seasoned folks, the non-millennial folks, that they too respect Senator Bernie Sanders and all that he is trying to do to make this world a better place through politics, through the use of public policy, through the use of the people's power. So he transformed this country during that presidential election of 2016. And let's see what he has to say about what's going on right now.
There is an enormous amount going on right now. And I think what, Nina, is most important for us is to focus on the most important issues impacting people of our country and the world, issues which often do not get the kind of discussion and debate that they need. In fact, there's some kind of corollary that the more important the issue, the less discussion the media will have, and the more trivial and gossipy the issue, the more attention that it gets.
And why do you think that is, Senator?
I think that's for a couple of reasons. I think, for a start, a lot of the discussion that we have in this country is obviously determined by corporate media, and corporate media has its own agenda. Their job is to maintain the status quo, maintain a system with massive levels of income and wealth inequality, maintain a system where a few people have unbelievable power over our economic and political life. And by and large, they will tolerate modest changes in that system, but certainly not fundamental changes, the changes that people like you and I have been fighting for a long time.
You say they will tolerate, but what about we? What will we, the people? The name of this show is We the People. So right. What will we tolerate?
Well, what we will tolerate and what we will fight for is an economy that in the wealthiest nation in the history of the world works for all of us and not just the few. And it's important for us to understand that we are the wealthiest country in the history of the world. So if we were a poor country and I said, you know what, we need enough doctors to guarantee health care to all people, we should make higher education tuition free, people would say, Bernie, you're crazy, we're a poor country. We can't afford that. We're not a poor country. So number one, what we have to deal with is this horrific level of income and wealth inequality. Now, you tell me, Nina, if you think the American people, we the people, think that it is acceptable that three individuals own more wealth than the bottom 50% of the American people, over 150 million. Three people here, 150 million people there. You got one guy today, Jeff Bezos, who owns much of Amazon and the Washington Post, among other holdings. His wealth is increasing by $275 million a day. You got it?
I got it.
He had a good day yesterday, 275 million, and today and tomorrow and the next day. A
very good day.
And meanwhile, there are workers who work, people who work for Amazon, who work in their warehouses, who earn wages so low that they have to go on food stamps and Medicaid. So you have this incredible situation where a few people have enormous wealth and power. They have enormous influence over the media that they own. They determine the kind of discourse that we have as a nation. So you ask what we the people want. And I think what we want is to understand that there are basic human rights. You know, we talked a moment ago about FDR. Basic human rights that every person in this country is entitled to. What does that mean? It means that if you work 40 hours a week, you should not be living in poverty. Because, you know, I was just out in Disneyland.
Yes.
Disneyland is owned, obviously, by the Disney Corporation. They are a $150 billion corporation, made $9 billion in profits, got $1.5 billion in tax breaks from Trump, pay their CEO over a four-year period $424 million, and they have workers there who are literally hungry, who are sleeping in their cars because their wages are atrocious. We have got to deal with the greed of corporate America. We've got to make sure that every worker in this country earns enough money to live with dignity and security. Healthcare. All over the world, healthcare is considered to be a human right, not a privilege. I live 50 miles away from Canada. For the last three decades, they have managed to guarantee healthcare to every man, woman, and child in that country as a right. Cost of prescription drugs are much lower. Healthcare is a right. Education, how do you make it? All right, you come from Cleveland, Ohio. How many of these kids are dropping out of school, not getting the education they need?
Far too many.
Right, to make it in a complicated economy. So we have got to improve public education. It is not a radical idea to talk about universal child care, right? Working mothers, what do you see in Cleveland? How many working mothers can find quality child care?
They can, and it takes up so much of their income that they have to make a decision whether they work or then they are relocated to being on the system.
You got it.
So that their children won't starve.
And every psychologist tells us that 0 through 4 is the most important years of a human being's
That's
life,
right.
Yeah?
But we, in this society, it seems as only if you're wealthy that 0 to 3 is important
That's
for
right.
you, but
That's
not
right.
for the poor child
That's right.
in America.
You know, you talk about poor children. This is America. We have the highest rate of childhood poverty of almost any major country on earth. Relegating these kids, yeah, it's hard to even talk about. All right, so you got to deal with those economic issues. We have to deal with the fact that the scientific community tells us that climate change is not only real, that if we don't get a handle on it and transform our energy system, the discussion you and I are having today may not be worth all that much because there may not be much of a planet left.
And so for people who don't necessarily see the connection between the environment and every other thing, that famine could happen, the push-pull factors that we learned about in history. Can you just talk about why? I remember in 2016, you said, when you were asked on the debate stage, what is the most important crisis facing, I don't necessarily think they said humanity, but the way the question was framed, and you talked about the environment.
If we do not address the global crisis of climate change, transform our energy system away from fossil fuel to sustainable energy, the planet that we're going to be leaving our kids and our grandchildren may well not be habitable. That is a major crisis.
And people who didn't support you thought, this doesn't make sense. Why did you say that? Do you still feel that way today?
Of course I do. Because what is anything worth if we're not going to have a planet that is healthy and habitable for our children and our grandchildren? What does it mean if poor people all over the world are going to be driven off of the land they are on right now, where they grow their crops, where they don't have clean drinking water, where they're going to be hit with extreme weather disturbances, where they're going to be hit with rising sea levels, which will make the area that they live in uninhabitable, drought, floods, the whole thing. So that's the bad news. The good news is we know how to deal with that issue, but the fossil fuel industry and Trump and these guys are much more interested in the short-term profits of the oil companies and the coal companies than they are of the people of the world. So we can create millions of jobs moving toward energy efficiency and sustainable energy, but we're going to have to take on the fossil fuel industry. This is an enormous issue. It's another issue. I was just, when I was in Los Angeles the other day, we had a meeting with Sean King. You know Sean.
I do.
and others in the Black Lives Matter movement. And here's an issue where I think many people in this country are not fully aware of it. People are saying, okay, yes, it's an outrage. I've seen the video where a police officer shoots somebody in the back. That's unacceptable. Okay, we all get that. But there's another reality out there. Today, we have 400,000 people in jail, Nina. You know why they're in jail? Because they're poor. You know what that means? That means they cannot pay their cash bail. So you get arrested, okay, and the judge says, okay, I need $5,000 bail. You go to the bail bondsman once, you got to pay 10% of that. I don't have the $500. What happens to me? I stay in jail. There are places that you know very well, in Missouri and other places, where if I have a $150 traffic ticket, right? I'm speeding. I got a ticket. I can't pay the ticket. What happens to me? Well, I end up in jail. Charles Dickens wrote about this 150 years ago. This is debtor's prison, yes. Putting people in jail because they are poor. They can't pay their bills. That is going on in America today. So that raises the whole issue. I know that you have been very involved in criminal justice reform.
Yes, Senator. And we criminalize poverty in this country.
That's the point.
Whether we want to admit it or not.
Yeah, that's the point. So, if somebody cannot pay $500 to get bail and they're in jail, that is criminalizing poverty. I'm poor. That's why I can't.
Yes. So on the environmental issues, you know, and our good friend Deborah Parker, who we both know from Washington State and the tribes, you know, some of the First Nations have a saying that we should care seven generations beyond ourselves. That's really what you're talking about, not just you're talking economic, environment, social, political, seven generations.
That's right. And our Native American friends who have been so horrifically exploited in this country are so full of wisdom. And what they're saying is, you know, Trump and the fossil fuel industry say, how do I make $1 billion tomorrow? That's my goal in life. And if I have to cut Social Security or lie or cheat or steal, that's what's important. And our Native American friends say, okay, how do we live in harmony with nature, not just for our children and our grandchildren, but seven generations into the future? What a beautiful way of looking at the world.
Yes, and more of us did that. Or another saying, somebody, I can't take credit, but this person said we should plant trees whose shade we may not enjoy.
Absolutely. So I'll tell you what else it's about. It's not only understanding the sanctity, if you like, of the planet.
That's a good word.
It is also understanding the idea of solidarity. Mm-hmm. And that comes from Europe. The Europeans talk about that a lot. And that is, what does it mean if I get phenomenally rich, but I have to step over somebody who's sleeping out on the street, or my neighbor's kid can't get a decent education? Is that what life is about? And Nina, honest to God, I can never understand, maybe you can help me on this, why people who are worth billions and billions and billions of dollars have more money than they're ever going to use in their lifetime, more money than their kids or grandchildren will ever need, why they need so much, and why they're willing to do so many cruel things in order to get it.
Does that speak to the negative side of human nature?
I don't know if it's human nature or not.
You know, nature versus nurture?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it certainly, we see so many horrific things. And you know, some people say it's human nature. Some people say it's culture.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then that takes us to the whole issue, not only of greed, but of tribalism.
Yes.
One would have thought that in the year 2018, we would be moving away from that. That Dr. King's vision that you look at people based on their character.
Yes.
Not on their color of the skin, or what country they came from, or what their sexual orientation was. And yet you're seeing people in the Trump world dealing with people's anger and frustration in a way. I'm different. I'm better than you. One would have thought that maybe we would have overcome that. How do we deal with that? Not easy.
But Senator, some people would say that Mr. Trump is just, he has just bubbled to the surface what was already there in the nature and the DNA of this country. So whether it's sexism, racism, age, all of the isms on the negative side of the spectrum. To that, what do you say? Because there's going to come a time where Mr. Trump is not the president of the United States of America. The same problems and struggles, yes, that we have socially, politically.
Right. I think that's true. I think that what he has done is open the door and allowed that ugliness to be more freely expressed. That he has done. But you're right in the sense. I remember I was at Howard University. This I remember distinctly. It was about a year ago. Meeting with 15 or 20 African-American young people. So I started off by saying, well, what do you guys think about Trump? And a woman, I think she was a young lady from Louisiana. He said, Trump? Oh, we've known Trump all our lives.
Amen to that.
She said, in other words, yeah, not a big deal. I mean, we're experiencing this. You know, and it kind of took me a little bit back.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I get that. But that takes the deeper question of why, and this tribalism, which exists today in the United States, exists in Europe today.
Yes.
How do we deal with it? How do we get beyond the superficial differences that we have to understand that we are a common humanity with the same aspirations?
That's right. Does that, I mean, you know, I was just listening to Representative Cleaver, who was on the floor, and he was talking about your colleague, Senator McCain, and he was saying, you know, policy differences aside, you know, in this great time of need, we should only be wishing him well and blessings. And he talked about the fact that we are a country where this whole, this negativity has just captured a soul that we can't distinguish the difference between disagreeing with somebody on policy and still seeing their humanity. Now, I'm paraphrasing him, but to that, what would you say, Senator? And what would you say to people, you know, to people who are listening to you right now about that humanity side that we've been talking about, the solidarity side?
I think the way to beat Trumpism and tribalism is in fact to stress our common humanity. Every person listening to this program, whether they are white or black, whether they're Latino, whether they're Asian American, Native American, you know what? Every one of them wants to see their kids do well, right?
Yes.
Every person who's listening needs health care and wants good quality health care. Every person who's listening should be worried about the state of our environment. Every person is listening here wants a decent paying job so that they can live with dignity and security. So our job is to focus on that which brings us together, which includes, and I know you've talked about many people who voted for Donald Trump, and you have heard That's me right. say, more than almost anybody, Nina, that many of the people who voted for Trump did so not because they're sexist or they're homophobes or they're racist. They feel that the establishment has turned its back on them, has ignored them, ignored the needs of their children. And they're saying, what about us? Pay attention to us. That's we need right. jobs for our kids. You know, my cousin is on opioids. What are you going to do about it? I can't afford to send my kid to college. So our job is to, you know, when we talk about a progressive agenda, you can talk about it as it's a human agenda. It's what people of all kinds of backgrounds need. And let's come together around that agenda. And let's, and I know you've been probably working as hard as anybody in the United States, trying to get more people involved in the political process with great success. Our revolution has started how many chapters in the last couple of years?
We have 600, Senator. We're not even 2 years old yet.
600 chapters. And I think it's probably fair to say between the work that all of us have done, that millions of people are now looking at politics in a way that they have never done before. And I know we get criticized, our candidate didn't win this or that primary, fine. But what's important is that people get involved, that we drive the voter turnout much, much higher, that people understand what politics is about. And I think you have done as much in this country as anybody to make that happen. So I thank you very much for that.
Well, thank you, Senator. You too. You shook up the world in 2016. Two final thoughts here to end the way we started with FDR. And I also hear a hint of Congresswoman Barbara Jordan in what you're saying. You know, one of her, the favorite quotes I have of her, which you know very well, is what the people want is simple. They want an America as good as its promise.
And how many times have I heard you say that?
Too many times. No. But that's what you're talking about. So if FDR were alive today, because what you're saying is juxtaposition, it's right in line with the 1944 Economic Bill of Rights, education, healthcare, jobs, taking care of people who can't take care of themselves. If he were alive today, Senator, and he was given a fireside chat, or you had to advise him on what to say during his fireside chat, what would you say?
I think I would advise him to pick up exactly on that theme. Now, people don't know this, and Michael Moore, our old friend,
yes.
actually captured some old film that had not been seen in many years of that 1944 fireside chat. And what FDR said at that point, he said, look, we have a great constitution, protects your freedom of religion, your freedom of speech, your freedom of assembly, all of that stuff. Very, very good.
Four freedoms.
All right. That's good. But we need also economic freedom as well.
There are, of course, people who borrow. Borrow through the nation like unseeing moles and attempt to spread the suspicion that if other nations are encouraged to raise their standards of living, our own American standard of living must of necessity be depressed. The fact is the very contrary. It has been shown time and again that if the standard of living of any country goes up, so does its purchasing power, and that such a rise encourages a better standard of living in neighboring countries with whom it trades. That is just plain common sense.
How are you free if you are somebody today making $9 an hour and you can't afford to feed your kids adequately? Is that freedom? How are you free if you just came back from the doctor and you were diagnosed with cancer and you don't have health insurance? How is that free? How are you free if you are in an economy where technology is changing every day? How are you free if your kid can't get the education that he or she needs to make it in the economy? So that's what Roosevelt was talking about. And that brings us all together in demanding that we have an economy which is democratic, where people have input, where we have a vibrant economy, but an economy that works for all of us and not just the people on top.
Can we get there, Senator?
We can.
So, Senator, for the people who are listening, and they may feel hopeless, I mean, there's a maelstrom of things going on in this country. People are feeling suffocated. They're feeling very overwhelmed by many issues. What would you say to them in terms of the things that they can do in their own communities to make a difference?
Well, what you can't do is simply throw up your hands in despair and say everything is too terrible and I'm not going to do anything. That is not going to make you feel better. At the end of the day, every time we work with our fellow human beings, whether it is a small project to improve our local schools, or we're working to elect somebody to the United States Senate, or we're fighting for the climate, when we come together to try to make this world a better place, trust me, you will feel better as a human being than just sitting home alone and you know, watching the TV. So I think standing together, fighting for justice, is what we need in this world right now. And I hope that people will come up and do that. This is a critical moment in American history. We need people to stand up and fight back.
Amen. Thank you, Senator, so much. Transformation comes by doing. So if you could do any one thing to make a difference, to leave your imprint, do that. So whether it's opening up your laptop and looking through your browser to find an organization that is in your neighborhood, in your community, that you can go either volunteer for or make a donation to. And guess what? The donation doesn't have to be huge. Any amount of money will do, whether it's $5, $25 or more. If you want to give of your time, your talent or your treasure to an organization that is working to make the world a better place, that is what you should do. Just do it. It could be the Boys and Girls Club. It could be your local NAACP or Urban League. It could be walking up the street to help your neighborhood school, to mentor young folks, to help them with their reading, their math, their science, their history. It could be volunteering at the church. It could be volunteering at a food bank. Or if you're walking down the street and there's a homeless person in need, and you stop to give them a smile, a hello, and a little bit of money. But whatever it is, get up and do something. And if you want, you can also join our revolution. But no matter what you decide to do, make sure you do something.
We the People is produced by Large Media. That's LARJ Media in partnership with the Young Turks.
I'm Nina Turner.